It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook.
Well, let's go back to that 1968 U.S. Women's Open win. Quite a bit more to talk about. I understand you might have been a little nervous playing with Carol Mann.
Well, yeah, you know, Carol is one of the few that could give a little needle. She could be, and I can't remember what she said to me, but she's sitting on the side of a hill. We're paired together the third round. And she's sitting on the hill, and I walked by her, and I said something like, let's have fun and play well. And she says, don't bother me. She says, I've got plan A for you, and if plan A doesn't work, I got B. I didn't have the nerve to ask her when we were finished because I beat her, I think, by 4 shots that day. I didn't ask her if she went to plan B.
whatever plan she went to didn't work too well, did it?
No, it sure didn't, because you were still 2 ahead of her after the third round. And I think you bogeyed the final 3 holes, but you still won it wire to wire by 3. So you must have had a pretty comfortable lead as you were finishing up that round on Sunday.
I think I had a 5-shot lead going into the last 3 or 4 holes.
Yeah. Now, the headline in the Spokane Review described it this way. So you talk about how times have changed. Tiny Susie wins Gals Open title. Can you imagine a headline like that in 2022?
No.
Getting back to Catherine Lacoste, who was the defending champion that year, and as we had mentioned, daughter of Renee Lacoste, who famous for the Lacoste clothing, but also the Wimbledon tennis champion, individual tennis champion. This was something I picked up in Sports Illustrated, Susie. Observing the intense gamesmanship of one of her competitors, Susie Maxwell, she declared, my word, it takes the fun out of golf, doesn't it? Why, that girl would leave you in a pool of blood.
Wait, Lacoste said this about me?
Yes. No, you said.
Yes.
Oh,
no, that's,
oh,
right.
Yeah, that's right.
She
that's
said
right.
that about you. She said, why, that girl would leave you in a pool of blood. You must have been a tough competitor.
Oh, I never heard that. I never knew that. But, yeah, I was a competitor, but I was nice to him. I tell you what. Joanne Connor liked to give some stabs out there pretty good. But I never did that. I never was unsportsmanlike. Joanne Connor one time, I'm getting ready to tee off, and she says pretty loud to Red, her caddy, hey, Red, is this the hole I hit an OB on yesterday left? I mean, I'm looking at Joanne. Fun. She said it loud enough that I could hear. It's in Joanne. You think I'm going to hit it to the right now, don't you?
Yeah, what a nice swing thought. So did you use your $5,000 first prize to buy a custom trailer for your 1912 Maxwell?
Well, I think the trailer cost me about $2,000. Yeah, it was, I was given a 1912 Maxwell car for a wedding gift and a beautiful touring car. And so, and being from Oklahoma, I had a horse trailer company make this custom trailer for it.
Yeah.
And it was the same color as the car, a blue and a real pretty royal blue and a black. And that was the same color as the car. Yeah.
My father-in-law had a Maxwell dating from that vintage, I believe. Yeah. So anyway, 1969, Bruce, we got another win.
Lady Carling Open at Pine Ridge Golf Course, where you won by 1 over Donna Capone.
Hmm. That was in Columbus, wasn't it? Did you say Columbus, Ohio?
Maryland.
It was in Maryland. Pine Ridge Golf Course in Maryland. Does that sound familiar?
I don't. Pine Ridge. Okay, well, I don't remember that.
Lady Carling Open?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been in the Baltimore area, I think.
I didn't know Donna finished second.
Yeah, she did.
Because
you
there was
beat
a
by
tournament,
one shot.
There was a tournament in Columbus, Ohio that I won that Donna finished second in.
Well, if that's true, we're going to come to it.
That's right.
That's probably the well. Let's see. I'm not sure which one that's going to be, but we'll figure it out. Well, let's go on to a tournament you won at the Raymond Memorial Golf Course by one over Donna Capone, Shirley Engelhorn, and Clifford Ann Creed. That was a 1969 Pabst Ladies Classic. Would that have been a one?
That wasn't in Columbus, Ohio.
No.
Actually, it was.
You're testing my memory.
So it was called the Pabst Ladies Classic in 1969. And in 69, that was played at Raymond Memorial Golf Course in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, that must have been the tournament then.
That must have been the one you were thinking about.
And that was in 69?
It was, the one you're thinking
about. Yeah, because Capone won the Open in 69, didn't she?
Well.
Yeah, so here's what happened there.
The U.S. Open?
69 is when Capone won the Open, and I'll tell you why I know that.
Yeah.
In Columbus, Ohio, that tournament that you just talked about, trying to think it was a playoff. I don't think it was a playoff. But anyway, Donna being Italian, okay, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, this tournament was run by an Italian's organization. And anyway, I ended up beating her by one shot. And during the presentations, I said, sorry, Donna. Donna says, well, I'm Italian. I was supposed to win it. Just because you're Italian means you're supposed to win it, huh?
Anyway, I don't think so. Yeah. Well, let's go on to U.S. Open win number two, which was in 1972 at Wingfoot, the East Course, quite a test. And that was by one over your friend Judy Rankin, Kathy Ahern, and Pam Barnett with a score of 299. A really, really good closing 71, as a matter of fact. Do you remember the tropical storm that came through sort of made things soft that week?
Yeah, the course played really long. I mean, actually, I remember having a driver on the front nine, it didn't plug, but it just moved barely out of its pit mark, because I remember that because I called the USGA and asked if I could get relief because it was a clump of mud right behind my golf ball, but my golf ball wasn't embedded. That's how soft it was.
Yeah, wow.
And I shot 79 the first round. Yeah. And I think it's still a record.
The highest score for somebody to have won the Women's Open.
That record may not be broken.
I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, they say all records are broken, but I don't think that one will be.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, who cares?
You took home the trophy.
Yeah, you were four back of Pam after three rounds, but that closing 71 kind of shut everybody out. That probably was the round of the day, I would guess, or had to be close to it.
Probably so. I didn't even know, frankly, I was in contention. I don't think until I got to the back nine and there's a par five that I think I started feeling the pressure on. And then number 17, which is a par three, and I can't quite remember exactly how long it measured, but I hit driver to the middle of the green and made a 20-foot putt for birdie. And that's won the tournament for me.
Yeah.
His driver to a par three. So, of course, played long.
Probably shot of the Open for you then.
Yeah.
Birdie in that par three. Let's go on next year, Bruce, in 73, a couple of wins.
Yeah, Heritage Village Open at Heritage Village Country Club in Connecticut, where you won by four again over Sandra Haney.
You know, that was an interesting tournament. And we stayed with friends of my husband's, and it was a kind of a big neighborhood. The gal was very nice, the lady we stayed with and her husband. And they were studying pyramid power. And they asked me what I needed to shoot or what I wanted to shoot on the first round. And I said, a 68 would do. And so they want my three golf balls that I'm going to tee up with. I gave her three golf balls, and she puts them underneath this paper pyramid that she'd built. And also on my pillow was a towel written 69 or 68, whatever it was. And, okay, fine. So what do I shoot? I shot. I think it was 68.
Whoa.
Yeah, which was written on the golf balls and the pyramid power and all the.
Yeah.
And so after the first round, second round, well, I said, well, don't, you know, don't waste another towel. Just leave it at 68. I shot 68.
Oh, my. Now you're starting to believe, huh?
I'm starting to believe this little stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think the last day I said, well, don't change it. But I think I shot 69, but I won one. And then, you know, I didn't think much about it, but I took the paper pyramid with me. They gave it to me. And also, under that with the golf balls that week, I had three dimes in my pocket, so I would put the three dimes under the pyramid also at night. So anyway, I took the paper pyramid with me to the next tournament that I played in, which was the U.S. Open in Rochester.
Sure
and I
was,
put the three dimes under the pyramid, but I didn't really think much about it. Anyway, the paper pyramid I gave to the World Golf Hall of Fame, along with the three dimes.
Isn't that something?
And I don't know why, you know, I mean, let's look at why. Why didn't I think about it and carry the pyramid with me every tournament I ever played in?
Yeah, really?
Because I won two out of two.
Really?
But I didn't think the paper pyramid had anything to do with my wins.
Well, speaking of superstitions, did you have superstitions? Did you carry tees in one pocket or another, or have a certain number of tees or color tee or same kind of ball marker every time? Or
no, I really didn't.
No rituals like that, huh?
No, I didn't. Mm.
You didn't go for that stuff?
No.
All right. Well, let's go on then to the 1973 U.S. Women's Open, Bruce.
Third victory in the Open Championship at 5 over Gloria Earhart and Shelley Hamlin.
Back to back in the U.S. Open.
Yeah. One of the few people that have ever defended the Open Championship for the ladies.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it was just my week. I didn't really give much thought to defending because I don't think I defended any other tournaments well. Let's see, Robin was about two. Was that 73? So Robin was 2.5. So my mind was, you know, taking care of her. And we developed real good friendships with the people in Rochester. And my husband called the club and asked if there was anybody who would rent a house near the course. And we ended up getting this house that was owned by Bill and Betsy Morris, who had Morris Lumber Company in Rochester. And to this day, my oldest daughter, Robin, is working for the Morris Lumber Company.
We have kept
in touch this all these years.
Amazing.
And developed a great friendship, and the Country Club of Rochester has made me an honorary member. And anyway, it was just a great week, and I just, I think I had a pretty bad round the second one.
Yes, you did. 77.
Was it soon? Anyway, then I think, did I have 68 the next one or 69 the following day?
69.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that put me back in contention. And I think really I did look at who was behind me or who. And I remember thinking, oh, they've never experienced the pressure of the Open, and I have. Because I think it was a couple players like Pam Higgins or something who had never really.
So you did something at that Open that not too many people ever do.
Oh, I changed my putting style.
Ah, that's what I was going to ask you about. Did you change putters as well or just the style of putting?
I think I changed putters. And it was one.
I think you did too.
Yeah, it was my husband. You know, he'd get bored out there, and he didn't follow me every round, which is great. But so he got started collecting. he'd go to junk shops and street fairs and stuff like that, and he collected old golf clubs and old golf books. And so this was a bullseye putter, and it was a little bit extra long, I believe, than some of the putters I had. And I went back and forth between bullseye and paying answers for most of my tour life. And bullseyes, I think I won more with than I did pings. But George Archer, we became good friends, and he was living in Reno, and I was living at Lake Tahoe. And, you know, we all were copied Arnold Palmer's method for putting, let's say. You know, we'd get our feet together, we'd get down here, and we really use our hands, you know. Billy Casper, yeah. Arnold Palmer, you know, lots of hands in putting. And George, he says, you know, your nerves, your fingers twitch and your nerves are in your hands. He says, you know, I'm starting to putt with my shoulders, my arms. And so he had me stand this way to get the feel of my arms, pendulum-like with my arms, to take my hands out of the stroke, out of the hit. And so that was a practice drill that George gave me. And so I stood that way this last two rounds. My back hurt me a little bit, so that's why I didn't continue that stance for a long, long time. Because it was a lot of strain in my back. Because I'd actually place my right foot parallel to my target line and then turn my left foot at a right angle to that.
Hmm. Mm.
Didn't have to use my hands. I couldn't use my hands, really.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yeah. The putter change certainly worked because you finished 69-72. You were tied after 54 with Hamlin, but then went on to win by five. This was a special day. You had a birthday when you won your second straight U.S. Open.
Yeah, you know, I talked about pyramid power. There's also something about biorhythms. And, you know, I'm not going to say I believe in it, but I think my birthday month, I won probably at least three tournaments in July or near there. So there's something to be said. They say your birthday month is your most productive. And they said 6 months after is look out. That's your most dangerous month. And they've done studies, you know, on airline pilots and collisions and stuff like that. And I don't know how true it is, but they say their biorhythms were not good.
Hear that? That's the sound of a walk-off albatross, a two on a par five to win a two-day golf tournament. That shot happened to me, one in 600 million odds. Since then, people call me Albie. Now, I've told this story so often, my friends can't take it. I'm pretty sure my wife, next time I tell her, she's going to leave me. So I decided to start a podcast to tell the entire world about it because it deserves it. It's the craziest shot you've never heard of. And guess what? There's tons more stories like this all around golf. And that's what our podcast is all about. Join me and my fellow degenerates, Panda and Shepherd, as we dive into them. Insane bets, crazy what-if scenarios, and all the you-had-to-be-there type moments in golf. Find us wherever you get your podcast. Did I tell you about my albatross?
Boy, oh boy.
Well, you mentioned Rochester. This win happened at the Country Club of Rochester for your third U.S. Women's Open win. And that's where they played the first Women's U.S. Open way back in 1953.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I knew they played it open there, but I didn't know it was the first one.
Yep. As Bruce mentioned, you're one of only seven women who have successfully defended their U.S. Open title, and there's only four others, maybe five others, that have matched that feat of winning three Opens. Mickey Wright won four, Betsy Rawls won four, the Babe won three, Hollis Stacey and Annika Sorensen all won three. That's some pretty good names to be associated with, all Hall of Famers.
Thank you.
Yep, that's quite a list. Well, let's go on to the next one, Bruce. It was in 1976.
Yeah, the Lady Keystone Open at Sportsman's Golf Course in Pennsylvania. This name keeps coming up. Three over Sandra Haney and Pat Bradley. That's a pretty fancy victory over those two players, a couple of great ones.
Yeah, well, Pat was just getting started, I believe.
Yes, he must have been.
Yeah, that tournament was played at the Hershey Country Club the year before, and I think I finished second. And then they moved it. And I remember playing with Pat the last round. And I think she was a rookie that year. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was her second or third year. But anyway, after the round, and we were talking, and I said, you know, Pat, I said, you know, you made some crazy mistakes out there. And she appreciated me saying and telling her she did some decisions that cost her not to beat me.
Yeah. Well, that would have been your final LPGA win, but we fast forward 13 years, and you and your daughter Robin became a first at the Konica San Jose Classic.
Yeah, we were the first mother-daughter. Robin got a... she didn't take up golf until she was 16. She went to a private high school in Hawaii. We lived on the Big Island. And she went to HPA, which is a private high school there. And the school, I do believe they had to take a sport. And so she tried tennis and track and field. And she's kind of built like me. And, you know, I can't run. Let's put it that way. My legs aren't long. And so Robin, after her sophomore year, she said, Mom, I think I want to try golf, because she had to do a sport. Well, you know, she picks it up at age 15, I guess it is. And at age 18, she's got a scholarship to San Jose State. Well, I do. Mark Gale was the coach at San Jose, and I really think he probably thought that she had a future, you know, in it because of me, you know, who her mom is.
Yeah.
But, and Robin ended up that she ended up liking it. We played in two tournaments together. The first one was in San Jose, and we both missed the cut. And the next one was in Rochester, New York. She was invited to play in that one. But Robin didn't like the pressure. People, they didn't think. They'd say, well, are you going to be as good as your mom? Well, you know, right there is enough to discourage her.
So it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. A lot of pressure. And that's why, you know, you don't see too many siblings out there on tour, you know, that make it, should I say.
Yeah, just to live up all those expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back, because you certainly played in an era where you must have had an opportunity to play with and get to know many of the founders of the LPGA, the 13 original founders. We've mentioned a few of them. What's your recollection of some of those ladies? Because as I've described in other episodes, you read the descriptions of some of these women. I call them, some of them, some badass women.
Well, you know, there's a few stories floating around that I don't know how true they are. Patty Berg was, she was my idol. I mean, when I was paired with her, I was thrilled. I was just hoping I'd be paired with her. She's... for some reason, I just, you know, I used to have freckles when I was a kid. Everybody says, oh, you remind us of Patty Burke. Well, I don't know if I do that, but she was just always so nice to me. And, you know, that's, you know, because I guess maybe my connection with Wilson at first, but then I didn't stay with Wilson. I was offered more money from Dunlop, so I went to Dunlop. Mm-hmm. Got big $3,000 a year. and Marlene Hagee. Marlene was the mom. She took care of all of us. I mean, she would be in charge of finding a condo or a house to rent. And she did all the cooking, and Judy Rankin and myself and a whole bunch, Kathy Whitworth, we all would stay. And Marlene did all the cooking, and she just loved to play mom. And especially to me, when I was a rookie out there, she felt like she should hold my hand and make sure I didn't get in any trouble. You know, stuff like that. But and then some of the founders I never met. You know, there's a few of them I never met. I just admire what they did. You know, we think we had it tough. They had it.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. And being I do recall Oklahoma. I was an amateur. I don't know how old I was. I think I was still in. I've been still in high school. And there was a LPGA tournament in Burneyville, Oklahoma. A guy named Wakel Turner put it on. And UC Ferguson got me in as an amateur playing it. And this golf course was in the middle of nowhere down near Ardmore. And what happened, this guy, Wakel Turner's his name, he got mad at the people at at Ardmore Country Club. And so he went out and built his own golf course. And I recall one hole, I hooked it out of bounds and I'm in a watermelon patch. I mean, he's had watermelon growing on the right outside the golf course on the out of bounds. And anyway, he had a big lodge, and a lot of the girls stayed in that lodge. And there was rumors that they borrowed a few things from the lodge and never returned, but I don't know how true that is.
So, Susie, I got to ask you a question. Do you recall the vehicles that he used to have in his garage?
Waco. Cadillacs, weren't they? They were all over the place.
And all of them white, every single one of them. I think he had like 10 of them.
How do you know that?
Because we played a tournament right there where you girls played too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Well, I remember when he had the Cadillacs parked out in fields.
Yeah, he had them everywhere. He didn't have to walk more than about 10 paces from any building to get into his Cadillac.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He was kind of. He was a little strange.
Yeah. Did he ever fly his plane over the top of you when you were playing in the tournament? Mm-hmm. Because he did that to the men.
No, he didn't. Not that I can remember. No.
Okay. No. Well, we ought to compare our stories about Wakel Turner sometime when we get a chance.
How many times did you guys play down there?
I only played there once. That would have been in 1963.
63.
Yeah.
And I think we must have been before that.
Yeah, it could have been. I'm not sure.
Because I turned pro in 64 and I played there as an amateur. So okay.
Yeah. So it would have been before that.
Before
yeah.
that. I want to say we probably did it in about 1960 or so. Yeah.
That's probably right.
Yeah. Well, and you'd get money for birdies and eagles.
Birdies. Yeah.
I don't know if you got money.
You got $10,000 if you could hole a bunker shot.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, there were no bunkers on the course, if you remember.
That was a trick question.
Yeah, so that was quite an interesting golf tournament.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, quite a character. Yeah.
So going back to 1973-ish, Susie, when the LPGA allowed for the first time to have your own professional caddies, did you link up with someone on a regular basis to caddy for you, or were you still going through a variety of caddies?
My girls were mainly my caddies, but I did one summer, and I don't quite remember when it was or how long it was. I did hook up with a couple of them, and you know, I maybe I was too particular or something, but I just recall that I felt like my girls could caddy and be as well, and Cindy. And Cindy started caddying. She caddied for Lenora Rittenhouse, and Cindy really didn't know what she was doing. And Lenora finished third that tournament because she said her mind was always on telling Cindy where to take the bag and where to park the bag and where to go and what to do. So her mind was never on how she was playing.
Yeah.
And she finished third, her best finish ever. And Robin caddied for Patty Sheehan some, and that's one reason I think that Robin, her golf swing resembles Patty's a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did try one summer, I think, a tour caddy, but it didn't work out.
Did you have a chance to play much internationally?
I was in Japan 13 times. Yeah, so I spent a lot of time going back and forth to Japan, being with Dunlop Sports with my equipment contact. Dunlop, Japan, guy named Shotabari. he'd have me over there quite often doing things. And then Defini Clothing, I represented, and we did a couple clinics in, I want to say, Sabu's department store, because they had Defini Clothing there. Mm-hmm. And then we had a few LPGA events over there, of course, too.
Yeah, so one of the guests we had on recently was Amy Alcott, and she told us about the days when on those long Japan bus rides, she would play the bus. She'd be the bus DJ and play all her cassette tapes and then have lip syncing competitions. Were you ever part of any of that?
No.
She remembers her and Kathy Whitworth winning the lip syncing contest on one of the bus
I
rides.
I don't recall that, no.
Well, let's fast forward to today, then, I guess, as we sort of wrap up your playing career. It had to be a wonderful capstone of your life and career to be nominated and then selected as an inductee into the World Golf Hall of Fame recently. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, you know, I never gave the World Golf Hall of Fame any thought. I didn't think I'd ever be nominated for it. So I was kind of shocked when they called me up and told me I was in the class of, at that time, it was 2021.
Yeah, who made that call? You remember?
Our commissioner, LPGA commissioner, Mike Wan, called me. And said I had been selected, and along with Tiger Woods. And, you know, I thought, well, that's nice.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, I don't think I knew exactly what it was all about for a while, because I didn't pay too much attention to it. Because I always felt like you had to be in the LPGA Hall of Fame before you could get into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Well, the LPGA's kind of missed the boat there. They don't even have a, they don't induct anybody anymore into their Hall of Fame. So I guess that's why I didn't give the World Golf Hall of Fame much thought, because I wasn't in the LPGA Hall of Fame. Which, you know. But anyway, it was quite an honor, and it was a wonderful experience. My brother Roger has some very influential friends that lived in Phoenix area, and we all went to Florida in one of their nice big jets. And so that, that made the trip nice. And, you know, it was great. It was a great week. And both my girls were there, and grandkids, and met Tiger. Just a fun time.
Who was your presenter?
Oh, Judy Rankin. Yeah.
Your bridesmaid.
They showed a picture of Judy and I in 1968 at my wedding. Yeah.
How nice.
Is it true that she passed out at your wedding?
She fainted. She did. You know, it was May 18th, Oklahoma. It was a Catholic wedding, and the church was not air conditioned, and apparently it was quite hot. And fortunately, one of the groomsmen caught her before she hit the floor. And that revived her. I mean, and why she fainted, she doesn't know. I think because of the heat.
I remember you referring in your remarks at the World Golf Hall of Fame induction ceremony to your daughters, Robin and Cindy, as your fifth and sixth majors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, gosh, the girls, they're my life, and they made playing out there easy for me. Like I said, it took a lot of pressure off me because I didn't think about my golf after it was over with that day. And it's just a joy. Robin still has a good swing, but doesn't play at all. And Cindy has a pretty good swing and doesn't play at all either. So hopefully someday they'll pick it up.
Well, at the outset, Bruce had mentioned some of the other recognition you've received in your life. A lot of this predates the recent Hall of Fame induction, but the 2018 LPGA Pioneers Award in 2000, recognized by the LPGA as one of the top 50 players and teachers. Several other sports and organization Hall of Fames. I've got to ask you this, and I don't know where I picked this up, but does your license plate say 3 U.S. Open?
It does, yeah.
And so it should.
I got the idea from Susie Morton, Susie McAllister, who played the tour. And yeah. Her license plate says 1 win. And that kind of gave me the idea. And then there's Craig Fonsworth, who lives here in the desert. And he's known for his short game putting. And his license tag says Putt Doctor on it. I've always wanted to do a survey and find out just how many license tags throughout the country are related to golf and what they say. I think it'd be.
I bet there's quite a few.
I think it'd be fun to try and find out. Yeah.
Well, as we wind down, we always have a few questions that we like to ask our guests, and I'm going to let Mr. Devlin go first with the first question.
Okay. So, if we take you back to when you were first started on the tour, when you were 23 years old, and you knew then what you know now, what would you do differently? Or would you do anything different?
I don't think so. I can't think of what I would want to do different. You know? No, I mean, I was going to say maybe play more tournaments would probably be about it. Because I didn't play. I mean, if there were years when I think I played 7 tournaments in 68 maybe or something. There were years where I didn't play many tournaments. Being married, living in Hawaii, and of course, the girls, Robin was born in 1970 and Cindy in 1977. So there's times when I was pregnant and I didn't play a lot. You know, and then afterwards didn't play a lot either.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go with the second question. And you might have given us the answer earlier, but I'll be interested to see what you say. We're going to give you one career mulligan. Where do you take it?
I mean, at a tournament?
Yeah.
One shot. You get to do it over. Where do you take it?
Oh, well, shoot, I already told you that one. The Open in 76. the Open in
67,
the Open with that Catherine Lacoste won. And that chip shot that I chunked. Yeah. Or if I had another mulligan, it'd be the third round of the LPGA Championship up in Concord, New York, upstate New York. Par 5, I hit a drive to the right down some thick rough, and it was a shortcut to the green over water, and I thought, I'm God, because I'd played really good the first two rounds. And I thought, I'm God, I can do anything. Because Kathy Whitworth said later, she says, she was back there shaking her head saying, I can't believe what I see she's trying to do. Anyway, I hit it in the water.
Is that the one Betsy Rawls won?
Yeah.
In 1970?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bruce.
So our last question. How would Susie Maxwell Burning like to be remembered?
As a loving person, as a good person, somebody who contributed to the society, helped the game of golf grow, wanting to help and introduce golf to more and more young girls, and having them continue the game and go to college on scholarships. And my understanding is, I don't know how true it is now, but a couple years ago they said there was 300 scholarships out there not given to young girls, golf. They couldn't find. And all you had to do, I think, is shoot around 80 or, you know, maybe 79.
Be able to break 80.
Depending on what school you want to go to, of course. I'd like to get more girls involved in golf and have them stay with the game. There's a lot of little girls out there playing the game. But, you know, once we get to high school age, there's other things to do. And there's the boys, you know.
There's the boys.
And, fortunately, the boys let me play golf with them. In my high school, later high school days and college days, I played with the boys. So,
yeah. Well, Bruce Devlin, I've got a feeling that in 50 years, as we have little girls and little boys listening to this story of this remarkable young lady, they're going to be quite enjoying this story that we're going to be bringing to them for hopefully years to come.
Well, you know, you don't have to be from a golfing family. My mother and father they didn't even know what the golf was, what it was at first, you know? I was lucky. I got a lot of good breaks. Let's face it. I was at the right place at the right time. If I hadn't asked if I could go caddy, and then my horse ran over the green.
May not have all happened.
I mean,
huh?
You know, if those two things hadn't happened, I probably would have been still riding horses.
Well, I can tell you one thing, Susie. It has indeed been a pleasure to have you with us today. Both Mike and I have looked forward to this, and we thank you for your time today. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as we have.
Thank you for having me. I had fun. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle. Quiet.